Welcome to The Running Public with Bracken Crocker and Kirk DeWint. It's Tuesday, folks, and you know what that means. Training Tuesday.
We are going to take every rabbit hole, follow tangents, use useless metaphors, get lost in the weeds. This is Training Tuesday.
When you're ready to take your training or racing to the next level, go to therunningpublic.com. We have both monthly subscription training plans, $19.99 a month, and Bracken and I both offer one-on-one customized coaching. Again, go to therunningpublic.com and check out our offerings. Bracken, how you doing over there?
Well, I feel old.
Well, you are old, but I don't think that's why you feel old. You told me before we started recording that you sort of like learned a valuable lesson slash reminder this week in your training, and I think it's worth sharing with our audience.
I went outside to do an interval session after doing primarily treadmill for ever since we ran together last, and it was difficult. There's wind, there's temperature, there's footing. I didn't feel efficient. Everything cost me more. And I know that, and I should know that, and I have known that, but we should all know that. And just, it's a good reminder, outdoor running is harder.
Resistance to impact. You know what's funny, and I'll let you elaborate on that, because I'm curious more how you felt after doing a quality session outside versus even during. But last three weeks or so in a row, I've gone to the track, which we never can do this time of year, and I hit quality sessions on like whatever the Mondo rubberized, whatever you want to call that surface is. And then last week I went out and did a 3-2 float workout on cement. Still wearing alpha flies, which are like big clouds, right? And the damage that even the cement caused for a quality session versus the track, both are outside, both are on real terrain. I was much more banged up, stiff, like the sort of fatigue and achiness and stiffness lasted another day. It was twice fold of a track session. And that's just going from track to road. And so from going treadmill to road, that has to be even exponentially a little more awakening, we will call it.
Yeah. And especially since I've got that Nordic track that has the huge flex in the deck and I don't go below 6% incline. So it was significant. Now, I was testing out the new VJ shoes, the Max 2 and the Lightspeed. I did 4x800 in each of them. And it had rained. So I chose a soft, muddy grass section. So the impact wasn't super high, but I still had some quad soreness the next day. But it was hip flexors, and it was my ankles and front of my shins a little bit from being engaged in ways that just not used to. And each one was just like that little ding to the gas tank. Everything was just a little bit more costly than I remember it being.
There's nothing wrong with the treadmill at all. We're big advocates, but when you start circling the waters of thinking about racing or putting out big efforts, you got to get off it and you got to self-regulate pace and self-regulate effort and start taking that impact and race-specific terrain. If it's the roads, it's the roads. If it's the trails, it's the trails. If it's a cement oval in New York City, then maybe you got to get on some clean, smooth cement surface. It's like one of those things. I'm curious. I ran in the new VJs. I ran in both the Lightspeed and the Max 2 this Friday as well. What are your initial thoughts? Do you have enough of a case study on them?
Not enough to make a conclusion, but the initial thoughts are that the Max 2 is improved in almost every way. I would say the upper lockdown is the only thing that's not better. And it's not a bad lockdown by any means. Mm-hmm. It's just the first one had such a stiff upper that your foot wasn't going anywhere for any reason to a fault, to the point where it just pinched people's toes and chafed them and gave them blisters. This one is much softer and more pliable, and the foam is softer. So I think it's improved in every single way, except for some narrow-footed people, maybe the upper, but it doesn't feel like a Max, like the Max 1 at all. It's a completely new shoe. Mm-hmm. The foam is light years ahead of where it was.
Yeah, foam is much better. I think it's the same foam in the Lightspeed and the Max. I ended up doing the quality portion of my Friday in the Lightspeed and the warm up and cool down in the Max. Believe it or not, folks, so I ordered a half size down in the Max, and I need to get in touch with Matt over there because it's still too big. And normally VJ runs small.
It's a roomy shoe.
I need to size down a full size in the Max and probably a half size in the Lightspeed, which is unheard of for VJ shoes. So if you're looking at ordering size down, probably a full shoe size in the Max and a half in the Lightspeed, at least a half size in both, I would suggest. But I did it on the treadmill. Grip was like just as tacky as always. Roomier toe box, which I really liked. I'll get them on real terrain. But first impressions, upgrade for sure from the previous model.
The Lightspeed is legitimately fast feeling.
Mm-hmm.
There, the VJ, we've always said, is the best grip you could imagine strapped to your feet. That's about the extent of it. These are now shoes, running shoes that feel fast. I don't know how the Lightspeed, I haven't taken it on hard packed ground yet, and I think that's when it's going to come alive. But Even in the softer, muddy grass, it felt faster than the Max right away.
Yep, I agree. All right, just was curious as to your initial thoughts on it. And then one last burning question that I must ask you before we get into today's episode, and that is, you had a 3-on-3 basketball tournament with your father and your sister this weekend, and I want to know how it went.
Oh, did you see my screen name today?
No, I didn't. Shame, in capital S-H-A-M-E. Shame. You going to go walk down the stairs naked next?
We brought great shame to our family.
In front of the village?
Yeah.
You understand that reference?
Yeah, that's a good reference there. Yeah, a little Game of Thrones.
So what happened?
When my sister played overseas, she actually, they recorded a video of them walking through where it was filmed.
Throwing
garbage at each other, chanting shame. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Good fun. It was, okay, so we haven't played that tournament in 4 or 5 years. 4 years? The clientele has changed for the better.
Okay.
It was divided into two brackets, the fun side and the competitive side. And the competitive side was vastly improved from the last time I was there. So we ran up into a couple of buzzsaw teams and didn't fare super well. Kind of got our butts kicked this weekend, Kirk.
Humble pie is good for you.
We snuck through. There was a preliminary round robin where you played 3 games. And then we snuck through to the final bracket and got eliminated in the first round.
At least you made it to the final bracket. I had to feel all right. Did you get spanked? Like spanked?
We got spanked in the first game. We ran into a team. They were like 6'6", 6'4", 6'2", and shooters. Mm. And that's tough to contend with. All younger than us. All leapers. All better. They were big and young and good, and they spanked us. It was 10-minute games or first to 21, whichever comes first. And it was like 21 to 12 or 13. It was a legitimate spanking.
I bet your sister turned some heads, though.
A lot. She had a cheering section by the end.
Yeah, because she was legit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was our best player, and I don't think it was close. And she kind of scored at will against guys who decided they had to play her as hard as they could, and she kind of still toyed with people.
That'd be fun to see.
There's a few clips. I'll put it up online today.
Do it. You need to put more on your social media. People can get involved with your life.
So yeah, we got our butts kicked. It was humbling, and anyone who knows me says I can always go for a little bit more of that in my world. So it was a character building moment, Kirk. And I got to show my kids.
You mean humility?
How to not lose your mind when you lose or get your butt kicked or have people talking or acting inappropriate. So it was good. Got to model what I didn't want to be.
Easy to act gracious when you win. A little more difficult when you get spanked.
Yeah, and we got legitimately spanked in one of the games, so.
Sorry for your loss. So should we move into today's episode?
We should. And it kind of picks up right off of what this is your brainchild, but it picked up off the intro, what you were saying, which is when you're ready to race and you really want to do well at a race, you have to get more specific. Like engine is engine. We preach that and I will preach that until the day I die. Engine is engine, but only when it's paired to the specificity of the task, the requirements of the race. So today is very much kicking off a series, which I always like, about pairing your engine to the specific demands of a specific race.
Yeah. How to run your best blank. How to race your best blank, so to speak. I think Your blank can be anywhere from the mile, which we're actually going to dissect today, to the marathon, to a mountain trail race, to hybrid. We're going to pick them off one by one. Probably start with the traditional sense of talking like the mile, 5K, maybe some pure run stuff up to the marathon, and then we'll start playing around in the periphery with hybrid races like DECA, High Rocks, maybe talking trail-specific stuff. But we're going to pick them off one by one, and you'd think, like, how on earth can you make an entire hour about the mile? Well, just why don't you hang out for a little bit, and you'll see, because there's way more to it than you think. And I think that the base phase, if you want to call it, or the off season for anything from the mile to a High Rocks to a marathon are basically different versions of the same thing. But when you start circling the waters, let's say 6 weeks out, or if you're a highly specialized athlete, things change vastly, in my opinion, as far as what the body needs to squeak every second or minute off your time, depending on what the event is. And so we're going to split some hairs in the fancy, fun side of things.
Yes, we are.
How to get ready for your best race.
You're going to see some trends with how we answer throughout this series. And there are some principles of racing and training that I believe very strongly in. And they don't really change depending on your style of racing. So, for example, we both were somewhat considered milers in college. I was more of an 800 guy who ran some 1500s and miles. I think you were more of a 1500 guy who could drop down or up a little bit. But we both competed more than 20 times at the mile distance, easily. And so we've experienced different ways to train for it. And there are speed-based approaches to running the mile, and there are strength-based approaches to running the mile. And you'll find the same thing as we get to all these distances. There are generally two camps, people who want to approach it from a speed-based approach and those from a strength-based approach. But neither of that changes the core demands of what you have to have for a race, which is, in my opinion, you have to be efficient and comfortable at significantly faster than race pace. And you need to have the staying power necessary to run significantly longer than race distance. And those two demands do not change depending on what approach you take, just what emphasis you place. That's really what changes.
And you're talking on really any race distance, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Anything. Yes.
Right.
Anything.
So that's universal across the board. I think, because today we're going to dissect the mile, I think it's more nuanced with something as short as the mile than it may be with something mm-hmm. that seems super calculated like the marathon. Your margin of error in something short as a mile is minuscule. You need to go out even more precise and calculated, even though it's harder to feel out that sort of pacing. And one tiny deviation one way or the other either leaves you falling short of being able to hit your PR because you went too conservative, or fading home and failing again because you just dialed literally a notch too fast early. And so the key is to get yourself ready in training leading up. And I think if you start from this position, and I'll pose the question to you, this is where I wanted to start this conversation. And I know you're not training specifically for a mile right now. Neither of us are. But how often do you touch mile pacing or faster in training as an endurance athlete?
Currently, right now.
Sure. Right now. Currently.
I believe you have to, if you want, I shouldn't say have to. Let me start over. I believe most runners should touch it at least one time per week in some capacity. That could be as simple as running some strides before or after a run, before a workout. That's how I'm currently touching it. Before my threshold work, I do a few strides prior and I work down to mile pace, or probably a little faster for one of them. And that's it. That's enough for me right now. But in some capacity, I think at least once, if not twice per week, it could be for a total of 60 seconds on your week. But everyone should touch it because it's so much faster than anything else you'll ever run. I think the mile stride is the fastest anyone can ever run without switching into a different stride. Like, it's a fast stride, but you can do it without trying to sprint. 800 meter pace is highly uncomfortable mm-hmm. for people to run without changing their form. But I think mile stride is like one of the best bang for your buck strides to spend little doses at throughout your week. How do you feel about that?
I feel good about that. You're saying, as a general rule of thumb, not even if you're trying to train to run your best mile, You're saying like, hey, I'm a marathoner. Hey, I race trail races. Like, still approaching mile pace or faster, even if it's just quick little speed sprinkles. You're saying that's a belief of yours, regardless as to the distance you're racing or training for.
Yeah, and it's not what we're talking about today, but that concept of mechanical threshold, like how fast can you take your best mechanics before they have to turn into trying to sprint or run hard mechanics? I think most people is right around mile pace.
Yeah.
You can take it somewhere around there, where if you look at people in lap two of a mile outdoor, somewhere like between 1 and 3 minutes into the mile, they settle into what doesn't look like a super fast stride, but you're running very fast. And that's the stride right there that I think is at the high end of our mechanical threshold as a runner. And I think it's very positive for any duration of athlete.
Yeah, I don't think people who don't really touch the mile very often realize how fast it is if you're really running to your potential, how painful it is early on if you're running to your potential. But not only that, it may seem like a fruitless pursuit for most of you listening, like I'm never going to run a mile or I don't need to run the mile fast. I would bet, let's say you care about your 5K metric, most of us are under speed trained in the truest sense. We go out for our runs, we do our threshold work, which is great. But I think a decade ago, 2 decades ago, before threshold became all the rage to the common runner, I think people were more over speed trained. It's like, oh, I went to the track and did 400s. Oh, I went to the track and did 8s. Like, duh, that's what we do. Now I think it's been glorified on the other end, and I think the mile, let's say, work that actually would be helpful to run faster in the mile, we've lost touch with that a bit, myself included. And so what I'm getting at is I think bringing it back down and maybe shooting for something like the mile, I believe paired with what most people are doing in their training right now would make you a better 5K-er, might make you a better 10K-er. If you simply just got efficient at running those quicker paces, it probably would bleed into the further distances. So I'm getting at the fact that like maybe pursuing a quick mile somewhere in the mix would be worth your pursuit and your other endeavors. It's not just like a one-off specific, everything else goes by the wayside. I think that efficiency, especially to buffer lactate, of like it's pouring out your ears, it does in this one, would be beneficial for further distances. So I just want to make sure those who are listening don't tune out right away, because I think getting good at the mile will make you better at the further race distances. Just wanted to get that PSA at the beginning of this.
Yeah. I also think it's one of the most satisfying numbers for people to run a good blank mile. You insert that in there. I ran a good mile. That's very satisfying. I still think to this day, at least in North America, and maybe I think it's in North America, it's the single most recognizable race distance in terms of what does your time mean to the average person? Because almost everyone ran a gym mile, a gym class mile in physical education growing up. Almost everyone understands that 4 minutes is exceptionally fast and 5 minutes is very fast, and that there's a scale moving back from that. But if you go to a normal person and said, I ran a 6 minute mile, they'd all be like, wow, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
5K is probably that equivalent overseas, but the mile or the 5K, I think, are the most understandable times for people to relate to. And in North America, it's certainly the mile. So there's something very satisfying about it. Yep. And I think a lot of people would be surprised how many times I do a consult with an athlete or a new athlete on boards, and I ask any fitness goals for the year. And just as an aside, they'd put, I'd like to hit an adult PR in the mile at some point,
but
I don't want to focus on it. But it'd be nice if I could break blank in the mile.
Always hear that. It's always a by the way, and it's always in there. I would say like almost half the athletes, right?
Yeah. I don't care about it, but I would be okay if I went and PR'd a mile this year. So we're going to today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an athlete time trial in the mile this week, actually. So what do you think? What do you think? And then let's get into the meat and potatoes of this. You had to time trial this week. Mm-hmm. Shoot your shot. Pretend you weren't sick previously or whatever, but you're not trained for it. You're not aiming to run a fast mile right now. We're just going to plug it in for a curiosity. What do you think you run? Give me a 3 second window.
Solo by myself.
Yep.
438 to 440.
Not bad. I think right now I'd be somewhere in the same range. 435 to 440, I'm guessing. Now, we haven't talked about it all yet, but let's say you give yourself 6 weeks. 6 weeks from today, if you apply whatever we're about to talk about, and you have a good base fitness to start with, How much time do you think you could take off realistically in a mile? You're already a highly trained athlete, right? Like most listening to this. What do you think, just with specificity alone, you could take off of your mile in 6 weeks?
10 seconds, I think. Because I'm undertrained for that distance right now. And so just getting comfortable at working faster, that would give me 10 seconds, I think.
I was going to say 8 to 10 for myself as well.
The faster you get, the less you get.
Well, and that's the next question I was going to ask is, let's say you're an 8-minute miler, okay? Almost twice the amount of time. I think 20 to 30 seconds would be a realistic expectation if things go well.
Absolutely.
The slower, in quotes, yeah, you are, right? So our ranges are pretty small the faster you get. But I think if you're a 7, 8, 9-minute miler, you can take out big chunks with some purposeful training.
Yeah. And I think most of those chunks would come from 1 to 2 days per week. You wouldn't have to dedicate, I wouldn't have to dedicate my whole training life to that. I think by adding one session per week, I could get 6 to 8 seconds. And by adding a second, that would get me my 10 seconds.
Yep. Yeah. So we kind of like are in the same boat there then, I think. I'd be curious. I think both of our ceilings, yeah, if we pushed it, I still think maybe 14s, if you dedicated and really went for it and spent a lot of time procuring that arrow, so to speak. But all right, so where do you want to start with this thing then? As far as, all right, let's assume, okay, let's take the assumption that said athlete has been running. At least they're doing easy mileage. They're doing some quality stuff. You're approaching this from a standpoint in which you have some fitness built, not necessarily mile-specific fitness, but you're running regular, more days than not of the week. How's that sound? So we're starting with, mm-hmm, something. Is that a fair place to start?
Yeah.
What do you do?
It is.
Where do you
place.
Start?
Well, I go back and I look at the vast body of work that we have in a historical context and realize that All good milers in the history of the world can run a pretty decent 5K and a pretty decent half mile and an okay 400. Now, some of them have different spikes in different ones of those events. There have been some great 400-meter runners that can run a very good mile. There's some great 5K runners who can run a very good mile. But all milers who are worth their salt at all have a pretty darn good 5K and can drop down and run some pretty quick work below that as well. And so that would be my guide. Right away, I'm making sure, am I in good shape at all to run a decent 5K? And can I run fast at all for a half mile or a quarter mile? And wherever my glaring weaknesses are, that's where I start going to work. Because I believe you can approach this from a speed side or a strength side, but you have to touch both sides. I did the whole only speed-based approach for several years in high school and college. And my final year in college, I added the strength-based approach. And when I say strength-based, I mean stamina, endurance. And it was night and day the type of runner I was at the same event while adding that in. So if you know, I can run a pretty decent sprint and I'm terrible at that 5K, right away we're starting to work on the longer side. Because you can sharpen down quick. And if you're already a great 5K, 10K person for your age or for your ability level, I'm going to start spinning the wheels a little bit. I'm not talking specifics yet, but just thinking about where do I need to start.
You started exactly where I was going to start. So we've been doing this a lot lately, Kirk. Yeah, we haven't really pushed back on one another much in recent months. Maybe we'll come to a point today. But the first thing is you can't forget what got you there, and you must keep in what we call like your over-duration training. Just because you're a miler now doesn't mean you exclusively do 200s and 400s at race pace or faster.
Yeah.
You need to keep your stay power arrow in your quiver. So that still means one, like I believe if you're going to run something shorter and faster than you're comfortable doing, which is most of us, it's me right now for sure, you need to expose yourself to that turnover work more often. So I think shifting to like a 2 day a week quality system is going to be really important for somebody that's doing the mile. And one of those quality workouts are still going to be threshold or 5K type based work where the intervals are longer, the rest is shorter, we're working engine, and we're not losing that. Because believe it or not, that's still going to come due. Once you get over 3 minutes really in racing, like that side of you still matters. Maybe even over 2.5 minutes. Like it sounds short, but like, you still need to be able to go run 10-minute threshold intervals respectably, even to run a good mile. And so step one, yes, don't forget about your base. And the base version of mile training is going to be like keep some threshold or at least 5K type work in there once per week. So let's have a foundation no matter what. And so I could not agree more with your statement there, Bracken. I think we don't lose sight of the basics and just throw it all out the window.
Yeah, and so just to kind of break down the two different approaches, like for example, when my first 3 years in college, I did the vast majority of my interval work was between 200 and 400 meters in length. And they were all very fast. They were all centered right around 800 to 400 meter race pace. And I got very efficient at running fast. And I got very fast for me at running fast. I dropped a ton of time. But I had such a small window of how it could work. If more than one surge happened in the race, I was in trouble. If it got out fast, sometimes I wouldn't be able to hang on well. If it got out slow and built, sometimes it wouldn't work well. I just had the type of running I could do well, and that was about it. And it works really well when you have a ton of talent. But the other side of the coin is when you have your intervals are longer and you work a little slower than mile pace and you build up bigger volume of work, which is everything I've done starting my fifth year of college on, you have a bigger window of what will make you successful. You can handle surges. You can handle things going well. You recover better from everything because you can just handle a bigger body of work and you don't miss by as much. You don't need everything to go as well in order to run well. When I was very fast and very sharp without a ton of strength-based running, I'd have bigger variances in my performance. I might nail a performance or be like 5 seconds slower in the mile, where once I was the type of fitness that was more well-rounded, I'd be plus or minus a second. My senior year, I ran the same 1,500 meter time within like, I think it was like a 1.2 second spread, I think seven times. It was consistent. So that's why I lean towards when in doubt, choose the strength-based approach to running, choosing a little slower than race pace for your engine work and keep the faster than race pace stuff for your skill work at first. And then as you get closer to the race, it becomes more engine work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And it's not like most people who are going to do a mile are going to jump in a race to do it. It's most likely going to be a solo time trial on a straight stretch of bike path or the track, right? So you're not going to have to deal with surges mm-hmm. or people going up. But what it does allow you to do is get it left or right of center. You go out a little too hot, well, you have the backbone to not fade as much. You go out a little too conservative, look at your watch in the first quarter and you say, shit, I'm behind by a second and a half on this quarter. It gives you the room to make that up and surge and not let it all go to waste, right? And so like it's the backbone of still the mile. It allows for those variances in perfection. And I'll tell you, if there's a time trial that I think is the most difficult to get right, I think it's harder than the 5K. I think it's harder than anything else to like get out and fire perfectly, especially when you're not repeatedly doing something like the mile. It's like a by the way for your season. Like, oh, I'm curious. It's really hard to nail it. And so having like a buffer zone, whether you go too quick or too easy, it's nice. It's a comfy pillow to sleep.
Yeah. And that's why I, whenever possible, try to steer people towards finding a mile race. I don't think you need to go find a track 5K. I don't think you need to find a road 5K if you don't want to. It's super helpful. But if you want to run your mile, getting around other people makes it so much easier to do. It's so hard to run well solo. Really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to look for them, but you can find them. There's usually a road mile or two in every major metro city, right? Every year you can, like you find one every year. Yeah. There's a handful. A lot of times there's these summer track events where you can find something to hop in if you want. And of course there's nothing wrong with time trialing, but let's get to specifics then. So all right. Let's just talk about the durability or what we call the strength workout for a miler. The one that isn't the flashy, like I'm going to go run mile race pace or faster. You know, from the 10,000 foot view, what are we doing? Probably shorter recoveries. We're still working like threshold system. We're probably not touching a whole lot faster than 5K pace, maybe somewhere in that realm. Longer intervals, shorter rest, even some what you would call tempo running is still in there. For example, 1,000 meter repeats would be astronomically long for a true miler. but 1,000-meter repeats with a 60 seconds rest times 5 to 8 would be a great foundational workout for a miler as one of their two quality sessions each week. Where do you want to start, like, from your opinion, as far as like the durability workout of the week training for the mile?
Well, let's start out, how far out from a race are we? Let's say if someone wants to run their best mile and they've got a lull in their season, where are we starting?
Let's just say we're roughly like 6 weeks. I like the 6 week mark because you can make positive change in your fitness, but it's not forever away. So it's still within grasp. Let's say in that 6 week window.
Okay. So I'm probably going to do 3 weeks where I'm sticking with somewhere between threshold, and I'm just going to call that 60 minute race pace and 5K pace. Probably closer to 10K than 5K for me because I'm a speed-based athlete, so I need the stamina. But if you're a stamina person, you start dropping to the 5K pace. But it doesn't matter to me where I'm doing longer reps, 800 meters or 3 minutes. Pick your poison, whichever one's longer or longer. So 3 minutes or longer for 1 to 2 interval sessions per week with short rest. So I'm still, my engine work is more stamina-based. It's not super spicy. They're not easy workouts, but I'm still building the engine that way. But what I'm doing is once per week, I'm sprinkling in a real speed workout with a lot of rest, something like 10 to 12 by 400 or 20 by 200, something like that. That's my third workout of the week. And it's still seen as more skill. It's not my main workout of the week, but I'm actually trying to run fast and I'm getting the badness out of the way. And maybe once per week, I'm finishing my other session with like 4 by 200 at, I don't know, a little slower than mile pace, something like that. But I'm starting to get the skill dialed in and I'm getting the bad feeling of being really inefficient at running mile pace or faster. I'm getting that out of the way. I'm going to do that for 3 weeks. So for me, I'm running 10 by 1,000 once a week, probably going to run maybe a tempo run or 5 by 6 minutes once a week, and then hit like 20 by 200 or 10 by 400, working down to mile pace to maybe even slightly faster. That's where I'm starting. Probably half my time spent prepping for my mile is laying the groundwork for the mile.
Yeah. In college, we would show up. We transitioned from cross country to track, and we'd show up for the interim semester, which is 3 week intensive. You pick a class and you're there for like 3 hours a day and you just rock one class out. Well, we had to be there for practice. So we'd show up, that'd be very base phase of track. And we very often in that phase we had a 4 mile tempo loop. And so one quality session might be 4 mile tempo. And whatever that meant like race effort minus like RP of 2. So we'd go run at like 8 RP. We'd run like 5:10 pace for 4 miles on the concrete, right? Well, we're milers. We're supposed to run a minute per mile faster than that, right? We're looking to run 4:10. So what? Like, we still had the foundation to that. And then we often did 1,100 meter repeats where our coach would have us run 800 at pace. You're going to come through 800 at 220, 440 pace. And then I'm going to take a separate split for your last 300 where you surge all the way through the finish. You get your over speed training there. And so we would do 4 mile tempo. We would do 1,100s where the 800's at pace, but the last 300 is quicker. And you know what happened? I ran my best mile of the season within 4 weeks of those workouts. We'd get in, we'd run the first Rust Buster of the year. I'd race a mile. It hurt a lot more than I expected it. I'd go out and run like 4:18 or 4:17 or 16 for my first one. Be like, oof. 2 weeks later, I'm out there running 4:10, feeling much smoother. I got one race under my belt, a few spicy sessions, but it was built on exactly what you're talking about. We did 4 mile tempos and 1,100 meter repeats. We did eights with short rest, running slower. We didn't even touch race mile pace the first couple of weeks. Yet within weeks, I was running some of my best times, if not my best times of the season, early indoors. And so I know we're younger. We're a little more spry. I was 18 to 21, but I was a miler. That's all I cared about. And I was still doing the work you're talking about. So I just wanted to drive that point home that you're saying, well, if it's a 6 week window and we're 3 to 6 weeks out, what you're talking about is a lot like what we did going into season as a miler. So validating your point there.
Yeah. Well, and then I guess to add on that, I'll talk about our progression we did in our build up towards track. We did this progression where we ran every Monday was outdoor interval work. Off-track interval. So we're running on this grass loop. And we started with 800s, then we did 1,000s, Then we did 1200s, and then we built to 1500s. And I think the final workout was like 5 to 6 by 1500. So extrapolate that back in reverse. You know, you're probably looking at 10 to 12 by, well, more than that, maybe like 12 to 15 by 800, and then 10 to 12 by 1000, and then 8 to 10, something like that. I'm screwing this up. I'm going to start this all over, Kirk.
Yeah, why don't you start this all over?
We finish with 5 to 6 by. Let's do that. 5 to 6 by 1500.
Are you so making all this up, Bracken? Did any of this really happen, Bracken? Are you just winging this?
I can even tell you what shoes I was wearing during this, Kirk. This is the old Asics DS trainer.
Oh yeah, I like the Nike Skylon for those sessions outside.
Oh yeah, those were good too. Mm-hmm. I like these for the grass because the DS trainer had a little bit of a little bit of grip to the front of them.
I own that shoe as well. That would have been a good High Rocks shoe.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, yeah, I recommended that to someone who needed a little bit of support in their shoe the other day. Mm-hmm. So 5 to 6 miles worth of work. So 10 by 1,000, and then it would have been almost 20 by 800. We probably did 16 by 800, but that kind of progression. We were running that right around 5 minute pace, which for us in college was a little slower than 5K pace, right? So we weren't doing fast work. It was slower than 5K, 60 to 90 second recovery. We built from 800 meter reps up to almost mile reps. And then the alternate workout on the week was either a fartlek in and out, like the 1-1, 2-2, 3-3 fartlek, repeat that for a while, or we do that same thing, a 4 mile tempo, and we finish up with 4 to 6 by 200 on the track. Those were our two big workouts for the week. And then coming off of that, we did a trail mile time trial as a team. Hmm. This was to determine who was eligible to try out for the team. So people raced it all out. And I think I ran 4:29 on a grass and wood chip trail. And then 4 weeks later, opened up my season in 4:21. An 8 second difference from a wood chip and grass trail and dirt, flat, pancake flat, to a track. 8 second difference is not very much. And again, the point is running all that 5K work and fartlek work and like probably slower than 10K pace tempo work with a few 200s thrown in there at mile pace really got us ready to run pretty quick. And I went from 4:21 down to 4:16 that year. I didn't improve a ton from where I was there. It got me like 4 weeks away from almost the fastest I was going to run that year.
Two obvious case in points right there, right? We have to factor in the fact we touched speed more. We were younger. You could access it easier. Like there is that component, right? I think it would be different now at 40, but okay. We ran similar programs there. Something that I keep thinking about while you're talking, and I just want to wedge this in here with this, is I do believe two quality sessions for the shorter race is important. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people, and even some of my athletes, I'll have them like a big quality session Tuesday, but then they might only do a midweek long run where they can burn a little hotter and then a long run with an optional cut down. That's common. For those of you on the running public training plan, you'll see that. In this case, as a miler, even a 5K runner, you could start to make the argument, probably two standalone sessions, we're probably dropping the quality long run and just making that like a nice steady effort. You could go for a miler, if you went 70 minutes, that'd probably be enough. But like in this case, I kind of ditched the quality long run in this last 6 weeks. I'm talking the last 6 weeks, and we do two standalone sessions where we're getting the turnover and quality is the focus. And I just wanted to wedge that in there. I don't know if we need to spend any more time on it than that. And we're big believers in the quality long run. I do them all the time. For the 5K and up, especially races over a half an hour, then you want to wedge some threshold intervals into your long run. But in this case, I'd keep it all separate. Do you agree with that? I see you nodding your head.
Yep. Two full interval sessions per week, minimum. That's what we got to be doing.
Yeah.
But we're not overcooking early. But we are, and I think it's imperative, you're doing your form work. You're hitting your strides after your easy runs, your accelerations. You're hitting 200s after your tempo run. You're hitting mile pace or faster in small little doses because you have to get the biomechanical efficiency down. And it seems like, oh, it's such a buzzword, but your body believes in that buzzword 600 meters into a mile.
Oh, yeah, it does.
You're either sipping on energy at that point or your world is being burned to the ground. That little difference in biomechanical efficiency is everything at a fast pace.
Everything. If you're thrashing 600 meters in to keep pace, you're effed. And that's what most of you would do if you stepped out your door and time trialed a mile today, and it would get real ugly and it would hurt real bad and it'd be a lot of snot on your face and tears. Yeah. So So I agree with you. So the one, so I like that, that one session a week is more the longer interval, shorter rest, 3 minutes or more, even a traditional tempo or threshold run. You can get a little cute with that. I think 5K-ish pace is probably as fast as you're going to go on anything, just like you said, a little slower. The other one, I think, in the beginning phases, you can keep pretty traditional. 12 by 400 with 60 seconds rest. 8 by 800 with 90 seconds rest. Something where you're just enough rest to get a little bit of quality in there, but not so much that you're still your rev limiter is on. I think that's what you were describing. Am I taking that correctly? And I think I would do the similar approach.
Yeah, and that's why I like that 20-ish by 200. You can even go 30 by 200 if you want to, because it limits the damage you can do on any one rep, but it gives you a ton of resets and do it better. Reset and do it smoother. Reset, lengthen my stride a little bit. Reset, shorten my stride a little bit. During a 400, there's a lot of time for your stride to vary and go wrong. In a 200, it's like, I'm running the turn, I'm coming off the turn, I'm keeping my stride together, that felt weird, I'm going to reset and do it better. And so early on, I like to start people, if, and people will recognize this, if they want to run a good mile, one of the first workouts I do that's not threshold is 20 to 30 by 200. We just jog back across the field. This is the one we do every fall and every spring at Whitewater. We'd start on the turn, run the turn in the straightaway of the 200, turn and slow jog diagonally right back across the infield to where we started. And we would just loop that for 20 to 30 reps. And you would just start slower the mile pace and build up into it. But it's so many chances to work on the skill of doing it well. And of course, you're running mile-ish pace by the end. It's still good engine work, but it's skill-based because you get to reset and fix it so many times in that workout.
Yeah, I like that. And you're just pounding those biomechanics over. And you get a lot of time to test out what feels best, right? If I really fight with my arms, does it open it up enough, or is that too costly?
Yeah, I ran with my arms stronger 40 seconds. Now I'm going to try to keep them calmer and relax. Okay, I still ran a 41, but that felt like 10% easier. Okay, I'm going to turn my legs over. And you get such quick feedback on that. You take your split every time, and the rep's not long enough to falter. You're not tying up down the home stretch if you've gone too hard. You're not doing bad form. You can just stay on top of it because all you're trying to do is get better at the skill.
Yeah, this is also a good time for setted interval workouts. And what I mean by that, and you'll see a lot of the pros do this too. A workout you've heard me murmur a number of times over the years, like 3 by 3 by 400 or 2 by 3 by 800, where you're still taking short rest between reps. Maybe it's 460 seconds rest times three, but after the third, you're giving yourself like 4 minutes rest, fully reset. That keeps each set high quality, but gives you very little time between reps within the set. It's a perfect hybrid mash, where you're allowing yourself to charge up every few reps, but you're still having to run reps 2, 3, and 4 or whatever it is with fatigue from the previous rep, hard reset, rinse and repeat. It's a good combo of everything because that's how the mile ends up being, right? Running that next lap under fatigue. So it's a good option for setted interval styles, especially with the quarter miles. I really like that.
I like
setted
that.
Interval styles. Yeah. Okay. And we'll put this together for you guys at the end real quick, but let's turn to the other workout of the week then. The 3 weeks closer, let's say. For me, as I get older, I think I might need to sit in the
switch.
Well, and for me, I might need to do that the whole time, to be honest, at this point, being 40. I may need to be doing what we're talking about next earlier, is all I'm going to get at. So I'll let you start, and I have one very strong opinion on this for the spice, for the one that really matters. But I want to hear where you start this. We're dialing in now.
Well, I'm just flip-flopping. I'm going from 2 threshold to 5K or 10K workouts a week and 1 sharp workout, and I'm flipping it. I'm keeping 1 threshold, and I'm even backing it off a little bit. Now it's true threshold. I'm running that 60-minute race pace because I don't want to take too much damage there. I'll probably stick with 10 by 3 minutes at hour race pace. Not very taxing. 60 seconds rest. And my other two now, I'm starting to rev. I'm starting to rip a little bit. And so this is where the tables have just turned. Now my engine work is paired with my skill work. I'm getting good at doing the stride I need to do under duress. It's no longer 200-meter reps with 200-meter jog recovery. Now I'm running long enough to have to struggle a bit to hold on to my form. And I'm edging that up throughout these 3 to 4 weeks of getting better in lengthening the time I can spend at race pace or faster.
Okay, so to clarify that, it might have been a little muddy. The one workout we're still doing longer. We're not letting go of the long, like the thresholdy type stuff at all. We're still keeping that in. You may even back off to save, right, to save room for the real spice, like to make sure that we're available on spice day to really hone in. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for the first block of training, I'm doing, let's just say I'm going to put real schedule to it so people grasp how I'm thinking about this. Tuesday, 10 by 3 minutes. Thursday, 5 by 6 minutes or a 4 mile tempo. Saturday, 20 by 200, something like that.
Oh, you're going 3 quality sessions a week now. You're doing 3 quality a week this last 6 week or few weeks.
Yeah, but that third one is not heavy. I'm doing 2 main sessions, and the third one's not like 20 by 200 at slower than mile pace working down to. It's not crazy. Maybe I even do 10 to 12 by 400 or 16 by 200. Whatever the dose is that allows me to stay just skill-based on that day. I'm not taking much. Now, and this is all assuming I've been doing my main thing of 2 threshold in a long run for weeks upon weeks upon weeks upon weeks leading up to this.
Mm-hmm.
Now I flip it. I'm doing 2 fast interval sessions a week and 1 maintenance threshold session.
Ah, gotcha.
That's how I'm preparing the final 3 weeks for this. And I'm doing workouts like 6-4-2 for 2 to 3 sets. 600 meters where I'm running 2 seconds slower than race pace, 400 meters on race pace, 200 meters, 2 seconds faster than race pace, 5-minute rest, do it again. Or 1008-642, trying to hold, same kind of thing. Second slower than race pace faster than race pace, or 4-4-2, 4-4-2, or things like that where I'm modulating the reps in order to work race pace or faster under duress.
So the only difference in my approach is I'd stick to 2 just because I worry about 3 for myself personally. I get what you're saying. So what you're kind of ditching the long run. You're just not doing anything like steady, right? Like you're not going out for
entirely gone.
Right, right. So I would just keep it in. I'd do like a Tuesday, Friday quality schedule.
If I would keep it in, I'd remove one of the threshold sessions early on.
Okay.
So I'd go 1 week of thousands and then later on 6-minute interval and then some 200s quick. And then the next week I'd do 1,000 tempo. Yeah, I think I would just get rid of the long run because I'm looking at this as a short time investment.
Sure.
The only way I'm keeping it in is if I'm doing my tempo run into like an 8-mile run. But yeah, I think short time investment, I'm not doing it if I'm prepping for a mile. I think you can and you should, but I'd be too tempted if I'm going to do this mile, like in for a penny, in for a pound kind of thing. But I like your side too, and it's more sustainable for the average person.
Yeah, it's just tricky because people tend to burn a little too hot, right? Like we say, oh, we're going to do a threshold session. But like everybody tends to torch themselves and then suddenly you're just like a little dull. That's just knowing people as people, myself included. But, and in college we ran 10 mile long run, maybe 12 miles in season if we had a weekend off, but like really we were racing on the weekends and we were doing 2 quality sessions during the week. So that is 3 quality sessions. We rarely, sometimes the day after a race, we do a Sunday long run sometimes, but the last month of the season, no way. That was a chill day again too. So we followed that script is what I'm saying.
Well, and you're right. And my caveat is that from my lens, I underwork out in order to get the next one in. So I know I'm to be trusted during interval sessions to not overreach. The average person should, yes, probably stick to 2 per week, not 3 sessions, because you're going to over rev a little bit. You're excited about the new block and your tendency is probably to do more than less. Mine's to do less.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I don't think I'm the typical runner in that regard.
So I'm going to ditch that threshold session completely. What I'm going to do is turn that slower session into very traditional stuff. Like even though I'm training for the mile, maybe I go out and do 3 to 5 by a mile with 3 to 5 minutes rest. Like I'm keeping the reps high quality. They're longer, but like pace matters to me. Like I'm going to go run hard and feel that sting. But I'm going to give myself lots of rest. That's going to be a theme here in the last 3 weeks. And you outlined that really well. Like you said, I'm going to do 6-4-2 and then take like 5 minutes rest before the next set. And that's where we don't do very often. I mean, your athletes know, my athletes know, those on the running public training plan know, like, a lot of short rest all the time. Like, we don't give you a lot of rest because I don't believe it's the right thing to do for an endurance athlete racing 30 minutes or more. When it comes to a 4 to 8 minute effort, now we're talking, like, I may have you do 8 by a quarter with 3 minutes rest, and you are running hot. I mean, over speed training for sure. The one place in which I think is missed is exactly what you outlined. Like, I actually want you reaching for pacing and tying up in the last quarter. I want you, or in the last home stretch, I want you to feel what you're going to feel with still a lap and a half to go in the mile. That may mean 4 by 800 meters with 3 minutes rest faster than goal mile pace, which is a horrible workout. Like, I'm going to run 2 laps faster than my goal mile pace. Yeah, but you're going to get 4 minutes in between, and you're going to tie up a little bit that last 200, and you're going to know what it's going to feel like when it comes to do. So like a 4 by 800 at race pace or faster is miserable, but you're going to feel all the icky stuff you're going to feel during that mile. And then maybe you can finish that session with some nice quick turnover work with the 200s, open it up, rep out 8 of those at faster than mile pace with the Bracken's jog across the stadium, something like that. And then you have yourself just like all the nice components. But I think the missing thing is it's nice to run fast for 200 meters. It's nice to run fast for 400 meters. But where are we actually feeling like we're going to feel in the race? Because that is so easy to shy away from when you're time trialing the mile, because it comes on so intensely. And so I think in feeling that in training, especially as you get older and it's not as accessible, the quick turnover stuff, I think is important. So even extending all the way up to 800 meter intervals, aiming to really hurt, but give yourself a breather. What do you think about that, Bracken?
Well, I agree with it. I don't know if I could ever bring myself to do 4 by 8 at mile pace or faster. That sounds horrendous. But I do believe that every miler on earth would agree that the third lap is all that matters during a mile.
Yes.
That's where people get dropped, or that's where people use up their kick, their finish. You need to get to the fourth lap, the final lap of a mile, with options, with gears remaining. And the third lap is what does that to you. And so you have to train to be able to handle or move during the third lap. And that means longer reps. It's where we failed the most in college, is we almost never went over 400 meters once track season started.
But you were also an 800 guy. Like, you also had that focus.
Correct.
Which is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but then that's the difference between getting to 600 strong every race and sometimes getting to 600 strong just done because you missed by a little bit. So I agree with you. And I'm going to now take everything I said and stand on it and throw it out, because okay, that is what I would do for a mile, exactly what I laid out, if my life depended on a mile. However, if I just wanted to run a good mile, I would only do one portion of what I just talked about.
Let me interrupt. Sorry.
Yes, please do.
You're talking to the person who's not all in on the mile. You're saying, hey, I'm still doing my other races, but like, I'd like to wedge a good, honest mile attempt in there. That's what I'm assuming you're talking about.
Exactly.
Okay. Which is most people listening.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So now you take the core tenets of what I said and nothing else. So early on, I said 3 weeks of 2 threshold workouts per week or slightly faster in 1 good hard skill day. Get rid of the long run. Now we're keeping our long run, 1 threshold day, 1 skill day. You're just subbing 1 out for 1. You're normally doing your long runner quality. You're normally doing a threshold. In the middle, you're having something. That something's gone, and I'm doing the minimum effective dose of speed on those days. And I do that for 3 weeks. And then the final 3 weeks, I keep it like that. I lower my long run a little bit, and that speed dose now becomes a full-on, honest speed work. And that's all I change. Nothing else changes. I'm going threshold all the way up through race week. And that's what I've done, minus that final piece, for most of the miles I've run post-collegiately. Most of them have been run off 5K pace at the fastest, with a few 200s thrown in on race week just to remind myself how it feels. Mm. And if you remember back, Kirk, what did I run opener that year? 429 on the trail, 421 on the track. I've opened at 425 on the road post-collegiately, off just what I said. We're talking small margins. If you wanted your best PR, those margins matter. But to the everyday person who wants to train for something else but just hit a mile well, this is perfectly fine for how to get there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wouldn't change anything. I'd say maybe 4 weeks out for me, my spicy session where I know I'm going to work is going to change to one of those mile spicy sessions we just outlined. I'm going to let myself go rip. I'm going to take big rests. I'm going to get efficient. I'm going to feel the sting of that high turnover tying up a little bit, which we rarely feel as endurance athletes, truly. And then I'm keeping everything else the same. Maybe I have a quality long run program that week and it still includes 14 miles of work. Great. I'm going to go hit my 3 mile on threshold workout. I'm going to still hit longer stuff, all of that. I'm just going to like change that Tuesday for like a month. And you know what? I could go run maybe my best trail race on that too, or maybe my best half marathon that happens to be in the books as well around the same time. I'm not really giving anything up. Maybe I'm leaving a handful of seconds on the table with the mile by not going all in, but you're going to get pretty close. And so I agree with you. I'm just turning my quality session to that spice we talked about, leaving everything else the same. I'm going to keep the long run in. And I think you can get, what do you think? Let's say a human's potential is 6 flat. That is, if they're all in at 6 flat, if they do everything right, I think on this approach, wedging it in there and paying it 4 weeks of speed work might get you to 605 to 608. That's pretty close, if you ask me. What do you think? Could you get you that close?
Yeah, I was going to say 615.
Okay. I'm saying best case scenario, but yeah, you're not going to be far off.
The faster you get, the more you have to do to gain less. Like the difference between those two plans is significant in work, and we're talking about 5 to 10 seconds per mile. You have to do more when you get into the margins in order to gain little bits. But early on, you get such a vast majority. And the most important thing, if you don't want to train for the mile, ever touching mile pace, other than I would say still do some strides or short 200s at the end of a workout. But if you never wanted to go faster than 5 or 10K pace, that is fine. But the feeling Kirk described of starting to tie up a little bit, where you've run hard enough and long enough that your form starts to crumble and you have to fight to get it together, I think that might be the single most important feeling to keep in once per week to the average runner. You don't want to run intervals. Don't. You don't want to run fast race pace stuff. Don't. You never want to get within one deviation of race pace. Fine. But you have to feel your stride falter in training. I think that is, if I had to do nothing else, if I could only do one thing outside of my normal training and I couldn't do race pace, it'd be stride falter feeling, starting to tie up. And I think you can get that on a 10-mile cut down.
Yeah.
I think you can get that on a compromised running workout. There are many ways to get that feeling, but that's the way you have staying power in a race.
So let's close this thing out with, I'm going to give you, let's say we're within the 3 weeks, we're 3 weeks out. I'm going to give you, if I could create a perfect, my two quality sessions, I'm just going to, because somebody will end up taking this and doing it verbatim, and I think it's important. So I'm going to say I do a Tuesday, Friday quality with a Saturday long run, and long run's going to be subjective because we're not going that long if we're truly training for the mile. So here's my week. I'll tell you what I think I would do. I would do on Tuesday would be my over speed day. And if I'm really going to, I got a mile 3 weeks from today or 3 weeks out, I am going, I'm probably going to do some sort of setted 400s where I may go quarter, 2 minutes rest, quarter, 2 minutes rest, quarter, give myself like a 5 minute break and run through that script probably for 3 rounds, probably 9 quarter mile repeats. 2 minutes rest between's giving me enough time to rip and try to really hit pacing. Then I'm going to take a hard reset of 5 minutes so I can make sure quality is there, but I'm running enough volume at mile pace or faster. That's probably what I'm going to do on Tuesday. Let's just say I'm looking to run 440, which is 70s. I'm probably running these at 60. I'm running them notably faster, 66. Right? Something or even faster. This is just an example. I'm looking to run faster than mile pace on them.
Okay.
And then later in the week on Friday, I'm doing, let's say, thousands, 1200s, miles, somewhere in there. And again, bigger recovery for me. I'm definitely going to be running slower than mile pace. That's okay. But I'm just running hard. Like I'm running those where like I'm really looking to press. And so maybe that workout looks like 5x1200 with 3 minutes rest. And I really care about running fast, efficient. I'm probably tying up a little in that last 200 meters of the last couple 1200s. That's okay too, but I care. And maybe those are being run 20 seconds a mile slower than what my goal race pace is, something like that. Maybe even a little closer to it. I think that would be my perfect week. A set of overspeed training early, and then something of duration, but still quality is important. I'm not far off mile pacing, maybe, 10, 20 seconds slower for those, but big rest-ish. So I think that's what would be my perfect week if I could put it together. How about you?
So 2 weeks of work and then race week. I think I'm going to do like the Mondays or Tuesdays or whatever, the first workout of the week, I'm going to do a longer interval session. And then the other one is going to be a shorter interval session. So the longer is going to be actually nastier for me. I think one would probably be 1,000, 800, 600, 400, 200, starting slower than mile pace in the 1,000, hitting mile pace for the 8, faster than for the 6, faster for the 4, faster for the 2, build into it, and then have to dig.
I want to jump in real quick about that.
Yeah.
Because I have a strong feeling about these ladders. Ladders on paper seem super approachable. You see it and you're like, oh, I get to get shorter every rep and I get to do this. And so it kind of tricks you. I think ladders are some of the hardest interval sessions when they're finished. Like you're like, oh my God, that squeezed everything mm-hmm. out of me. And you don't realize what it's done to you. It's like a workaround. You do a ladder, you think, it's going to be better because I get shorter every rep, but they're nasty. And so I just make sure, like, you're not talking like, oh, this is like a gift to myself. Like, these things are gritty, nasty workouts.
Yeah, they trick you into the real work. So that workout, 1,000 meters, 800, 600, 400, 200. The 1,000, I think, is the key rep here. You run it slightly slower than mile pace. Let's call it 3K pace or 2 mile pace. And on paper, you think, okay, it's slower than mile pace. This is going to be fine. And you get to the end of it and you're like, oh my goodness, that wasn't terrible, but I'm not fresh anymore. And now next up, I have an 800 meter at mile pace. And suddenly you realize this work's starting, but you're already 1,000 meters into the workout. So the 800 hits at mile pace, and it's a little bit of a fight the last like 300 meters in that rep. You come through the 4, like it's okay, but it's starting to hit me, and you have to hang on. And you make it half of a race at mile pace with 1,000 meters of 2 mile pace in your legs. And then you just have to hang on 6:42, 600 at the same pace, which is almost worse. And then 400 a little faster, but it's almost over. And then the 200, who cares? But you're working through progressive fatigue, and it's just a very, that's not a ton of meters in the workout, but it's a lot of race feeling meters.
What's your rest?
I'm probably giving myself 3 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes on every rep.
Okay.
Just enough to regenerate and not quite enough to be fresh.
I might go 1-to-1. I might, like, if my 1,000 took me 3 minutes, I might take 3. If my 8 took 2:30, I might give me 2:30. That'd be probably a good principle to follow for that one, right?
That's not bad.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's, or half distance jog recovery is another popular one on this type. 1,000 on, 500 slow jog. 800 on, 400 slow jog. And what are you talking about? It's probably working out to the exact same rest schedule that you were just saying.
That workout would get me fit. I would do that workout. I like that workout.
Yeah. And then the next week, 1 week out from race day, or a week and a half, like 9 days-ish, somewhere like that, the next version of that is I'm going 1,000 meters at mile race pace, recovering, and then going like 4x4.
Sure.
Or 4:4, 2:2. I don't even care what comes after that. Getting through the halfway point and continuing. Just long enough to know, but not long enough to leave your race in practice. I think 1,000 meters at mile pace is a brutal, necessary workout for a miler. Recover maybe 5 minutes. I don't care. And then just run 4:4, 2:2 or something like that to finish it off. Turn over when you're tired. But getting past the halfway point, I think, is psychologically and physically very key.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the big thing is we're all looking, both of us are looking to really feel it, feel the work, like feel what the mile is going to feel like. We want to be in discomfort. Yeah. Okay. And then what's your other session?
Well, now just to reiterate for the every man out there who's not used to running miles, what this teaches you more than anything is the difference between running mile pace and racing mile pace. There's a big difference between the two. Anyone can run your mile pace for a bit, but to race it, you have to be able to do it very relaxed. And so getting through that halfway point and thinking, my arms have been working way too hard. This is not sustainable. That's a very important thing to feel, to know how to back off your effort and still hit the pace. But then on the in-between two, I think I'm just going 2 to 3 rounds of 4:42. 400 meters at mile pace, at slightly slower. So let's use your example. You're trying to run a 4:40. That's 70 seconds per 400. I'm going probably first round 72:70, and then a fast 200 at like 800 meter pace. And then the next run, I'm going 70:68, fast 200. Hmm. Getting, and maybe the whole time, mile pace slightly faster 800 meter pace to get short little reps at race pace or faster to balance out the longer, really stingy.
How many rounds? How much rest?
2 to 3 rounds. I'm not putting pressure on it. I'm trying to run clean, and I am on that one. I'm taking equal rest.
Okay.
So probably what? That's 45 to 60, 70 seconds between reps, and then I'm taking 3 minutes between sets.
Yeah, these setted interval sets are really a nice way to manage all this in these training sessions. You're running fast while a little tired from the previous rep, but then you get a hard reset eventually between sets. It works out nice.
You know it's coming. It gets you through the set, and you think, I couldn't do another 200 right now. But 3 minutes later, all right, I have another set in me.
Yeah, and then if I were to do the long run program, I'm still going to go run like 70 minutes probably on the week. Like if I really am all in on the mile, probably going to go run like 10 miles.
That's where I'm capping it.
Yeah, somewhere like that. Yeah. Anything else you want to add? I think we did it. I think we confused them enough and also gave them enough to give it a go if they want. What do you think?
Well, I think there's one important piece to add, and that is how do you race the mile then? You've done this. And the important thing is go watch a bunch of miles. Almost never does the person in the lead 200 to 400 meters in win the race. And that's all you need to know about the mile. It's very short. It's tempting to go run very fast. But if you're dying towards the end, you give up way more time than you earned early on. But if you're accelerating towards the end, you gain way more time than you gave up early on. So the best way to run it is to leave yourself options. You can always sprint the last 200 meters. And that's what people forget. You can be off PR pace until the final 200 meters in PR. Because the difference in a 200 meter sprint versus a 200 meter falling apart run can be like 5 seconds. If you have just like your belly full of fire the last 200 meters, you can go from running 40 second 200s to 33. And you just gain 7 seconds right there. Where if you're just barely hanging on, you don't PR. So you need to hold off as late as possible in the mile. There is nothing to be gained early. The worst thing you can do is get through one lap and your race is done because you've gone too fast. There's nothing to be gained by getting out hard in the mile.
Yeah, the mile, I think a lot of people think of, and it like assumes aggression and intense and sharp out of the gates. You still got to stay asleep through it. 400 meters. You start to mentally engage through 8. You realize, oh, crap, this hurts by 800. And then you sink your teeth into it, right? That's how the mile is run. But you are asleep for as long as possible. If you can stay asleep through 600, great. Good luck. But even that first lap, like you got to be able to run fast but relaxed. You can start thrashing after you get to about 1,000 meters. But try to get there within yourself. And you can will your way through the last 600 lap and a half. Yeah.
And your times may even stay even like that.
Yeah.
That 440 mile, 70, 70, 70, 70. It's like I run a 70 at 70% effort. And then I raise it up to 85% effort and I manage to run another 70. I raise it to 95% effort and I scrape by a 70.
Yes.
That's the way a mile works. You just keep raising the intensity to hopefully keep the same pace.
Exactly. Glad you said that. Said in the beginning, how would we get to an hour? Well, we're at an hour 10, so it's probably time to put a bow tie on this, Brackenstein. Folks, tomorrow night school begins. This is Bracken's brainchild. I don't know if registration is still open, Bracken. You'll have to say, I will not be there. Bracken is very excited. He's like a kid on Christmas Eve. He can't wait to go teach you guys all about threshold. So looking forward to having you start that. I'll probably join the next night school, this first one. Bracken's decided to volunteer his tribute. So thank you, Bracken. The running public is lucky to have you. Starts tomorrow night.
Yep. And if you are signed up for this, I assume you're listening to this podcast, most likely. If you haven't yet, start compiling your list of questions. Worst case scenario, they all get answered and you don't get to ask any of them. Or maybe that's best case. Other case scenario is I don't get to any of them and you ask me them. But either way, the goal is that by the end of this course, you don't have any questions on paper that you came into the course with. You may have more questions now. We may have uncovered things you haven't thought about, but I do not want anyone to go home not having their questions satisfied. So please do come to class with a list of things that you want to question me on, challenge me on. It doesn't matter. I'm going to deliver for a bit, and then we're going to engage for a bit. I'm going to deliver for a bit. I'm going to check for understanding. And if your questions fall into that segment we just did and they haven't been satisfied, that's when we're going to address them. And then at the end, the final, however long it's going to take, is your time to ask that. So do prepare things you want to talk about.
Cool. So again, it's closed to confirm. You snooze, you lose. It's over.
By the time anyone hears this, you won't even have the option to click on the website anymore.
If there's a lot of, oh, shoot, I meant to sign up, maybe we'll do a second round. But all right, man. Well, good luck on Wednesday night, folks attending in Bracken. And then we'll see you later this week for our Friday interview.
Good destiny, Kirk.
Good destiny to you, Bracken.
If anything resonated with you on today's episode and you're curious about taking your training to the next level, check out therunningpublic.com, where we have a training plan to fit your needs.